Yes, I said marhaban. Marhaban to you. I am a Dr. Jalis Al-Sakran, and you are listening to Music for Human. Music for Human is New Age talk radio with an emphasis primarily on you, the listener, but secondarily on me.
And thirdarily on me.
Yes, yes, in a tertiary way, on my co-hosts here, Aurora, vocal therapist.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for being on the show again.
Well, thank you. We also are delighted to welcome Professor Levine back here with us.
Yes, I think I feel that you are all blessed today by my presence, and I would also like to express the fact that it's a very narrow but hexagonal pleasure of mine to be here today. As I've mentioned before, I feel that it's useful for us in terms of our spiritual growth to express our feelings in terms of polygons.
It's a beautiful form of synesthesia there.
A polygonal expression.
Yeah, of course, not to be confused with polygamous, which is also interesting, an interesting topic of conversation.
A polygamous feeling.
Yes.
So, polygonal, of course, to me indicates that there are many facets of joy that you are experiencing from being here.
Yes, I said it was particularly hexagonal today.
Meaning there are six.
There are six facets to my joy.
And then also two faces.
Two faces, that's right. So. And a behind.
So then the polygamous would mean that it has many...
Many women.
Many wives.
Many
feeling
wives
has
women.
Many wives. Or that it has many husbands,
yes.
Or it is in some sort of multi-amorous situation.
Yeah.
Your
it's
feelings.
Interesting. In the U.S. in general, of course, we don't condone polygamy, but it seems that among certain sports players, such as golfers, a sort of covert form of polygamy is practiced.
Well, yeah, that's interesting. Like, is it really worse for certain golfers to have several mistresses? And would it be better for everyone, for society in general, to know, don't play with this one?
Well, I think most of us are too busy. Golfers, of course, live a life of leisure. The sport itself is, basically like walking. It's extremely easy. It doesn't take much time or effort. So the rest of one's life can be devoted to either, say, meditation or maintaining a harem of mistresses.
It's difficult to imagine that a golfer would... retire to a cave and meditate, with crushing thought the consequences of precisely striking a dimpled sphere.
Well, it's interesting because, of course, some of us derive our focus and our concentration from quiet meditation and contemplation. And that's due to their sort of intrinsic spiritual energy, whereas others have a sort of more, lusty energy, which requires constant carnal gratification in order to focus the mind.
Just a sort of release must occur, and it can either occur from one outpouching or another.
Exactly.
These expressions there must be a release of energy.
Well, it's not just a release, because it also is a regeneration of energy.
A renewal.
Right. Of course, in the tantric yoga, the ancient books talk about release at the same time as regeneration. And there's the image of the snake swallowing its tail as a form of destruction and regeneration at the same moment.
The Ouroboros.
Exactly.
Now, the image I had was of the apple tree whose apples are not permitted to grow, and the resulting growth would occur inward. Mm. And so regeneration must occur by both consumption and emission.
It's interesting that both of these metaphors have somewhat circular or spherical shapes to them.
Right, that is interesting. We were talking before about polygons, and of course, as any ancient Greek geometrician will tell you, if you ask them, as the number of the sides of the polygons approaches infinity, the polygon itself approaches the perfect circle.
And there is some sort of inherent complexity in that infinite side idea, along with an inherent simplicity in the beautiful and harmonic shape of the circle.
Now, are you both, I imagine you are both familiar with the idea of the Platonic solid, the analog of the polygon in three dimensions.
Well, of course, I am a Pythagorean myself, so of course I'm familiar with this.
You are familiar. So one of the most interesting features, I think, is a regular polygon is a shape that has every side being the same length. And the analog in three dimensions is an object which has every face being a regular polygon and all of them being identical, all of the same size.
Mm-hmm. Sort of like a fractal.
Yeah, sort of.
Yeah. Or a cube.
A cube is an example of a Platonic solid. So in two dimensions, there are infinitely many polygons. But in three dimensions, the greater freedom means that perfection is achieved more rarely.
This is an interesting thought, that with the freedom, perhaps, of our own human emotions and of our actions, that perfection is so difficult to achieve when it is so easy to fall into darkness or communism.
But it can be achieved, and when it is achieved, then it seems somehow more beautiful and subtle than perfection with fewer freedoms. Yeah. So we see perfection in children who have, you know, who are placed in the care of their parents, and it's not impressive. But when we see perfection from a child who is given freedom and who is under no protection, the student who performs well without guidance.
Mm, the feral children, you mean?
Precisely.
The wolf children.
The feral, they are more valued, and
yes,
they are more beautiful because they have found a way to be guided by existence itself.
And of course, it's not surprising that these feral or wolf children, if you may, tend to be better at arithmetic than regular American children.
Out of necessity.
Right. But what's surprising to me is that they're also better at spelling, which is sort of unexpected, I think.
So I feel like our chakras and our auras in general have sort of geometric shapes to them. So perhaps the dimensionality, the number of sides that each child has within them, can determine whether or not they are capable of perfection.
I see. So there are some children, you think, who have lower dimensional chakras than others.
And the only way to achieve the perfect sphere is through constant, unrelenting meditation.
Well, I often like to think of this analogy in terms of human relationships, romantic relationships. One-sided relationships can be extremely easy. So, for example, if a human relationship is only about carnal satisfaction, or only about, say, friendship, it can be extremely easy to maintain. But once you bring in this multi-dimensionality where you want to fuse together a carnal aspect and a loving aspect into one relationship, it often becomes extremely difficult to maintain.
My imagination of the sphere there is quite a challenging one. And, you know, the sphere, it seems impossible to me because to become a sphere, one would have to become both omnipotent and to exercise this potency perfectly. You know?
Through constant exercise.
Through a very vigilant application of power. And the ironic thing is that in three dimensions, any object which has power greater than 20 must have infinite power to again be perfect. We have many approximations, but there is no perfection reached until you have infinite power.
So perhaps there's a balance for achievable perfection, that one must not always spend their entire time straining towards perfection, but a good fraction of their time, perhaps one-fifth.
I mean, the Greeks believed that their elements were expressed, you know, there was an analog between their elements and the solids. But of course there are five Platonic solids, not counting the sphere, you know, excluding the sphere.
Well, perhaps the fifth is love.
There are five, excluding the sphere.
Excluding love as well.
And there are four elements excluding love. So there is a fifth element. And the fifth element in the Greek philosophy was the universe itself, that there was a universe fabric. But I believe that they regarded it as being corresponding to the dodecahedron. This was the one that was regarded as corresponding to the universe.
Yes,
and the fifth element.
Of course, the Hellenized Jews who sought to incorporate Greek philosophy with Judaism believe that the seventh element was circumcision.
It certainly seems important. I was having a discussion about circumcision recently with a friend who's expecting a child. And it's a point of some great concern.
Is he sharpening his knives now as we speak?
Well, you know, there is a debate regarding circumcision. But to me, the issue really admits no debate.
But perhaps it hides the debate.
I'm not sure that there is room.
Well, one could say that the debate is, say, clouded a bit by a metaphorical foreskin.
That it's a covering, blinding the certain parties from reason.
I mean, I think this debate about circumcision really goes back to an ancient mystical cleavage between two schools of philosophy. And one is that the sword, to have its full power and glory, must never be sheathed. It must always be present and visible.
Hmm.
And the other mystical camp believes that the powerful sword maintains its power and increases its power when it's sheathed, when not being used.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know a group of Nigerian knife wielders who maintain a belief that when the knife is unsheathed, it must draw blood before being sheathed again. My co-hosts are expressing shock in their faces, but it's true. So what they will do is, I recall when I was with them traveling, that if I asked to see a knife or if I needed a knife briefly, they would, you know, draw the knife, draw the blade, and then cut themselves before returning it to the sheath.
After you had used it or before?
After, ideally.
That's nice of them.
Well, they are concerned for these things, but
hygiene. Yeah.
The idea there is that the blade will become thirsty.
Mm.
As part of my general life philosophy, I don't agree with bloodthirsting a blade. Of course, we are all peaceful individuals, and we don't wish for blades to become bloodthirsty. Perhaps we wish for them to become cautious.
Well, I think the point is perfection in the pursuit, you know, perfection in this or that pursuit. and this is their pursuit, and they are pursuing it with an eye towards perfection.
Of course, as a Jew myself, I remember the act of my circumcision. It's my one of my earliest memories, perhaps my earliest, of course. The circumcision occurs on the eighth day after birth. I remember nothing of those first 7 days, and I have this very strong and striking memory of the day of the circumcision. And then again, I remember nothing until the age of 2.5.
And the moment of the blood being drawn, I mean, do you remember pain?
I remember crying, but it was more a cry of joy than a cry of pain in my personal experience, because I knew that by unsheathing the sword would become more potent over my entire lifetime. And I think my lovers have also appreciated that potency.
Well, if you would like to share a tale of potency or knives or blood or indeed anything, the number is 617-253-8810, and we have two lines available for communion.
And I should also mention that I think perhaps the phone lines might be quiet tonight because it is, of course, the ancient neo-pagan Hindu-Jewish religion celebration of Hanukkah tonight, which celebrates the victory of the extremist and dogmatic Jews against the more moderate Hellenizing Jews. I do believe we have a caller now coming on the line.
Let's see if we can connect our signal with theirs. Caller, marhaba. Caller?
Hello.
Yes, welcome, caller.
Thank you. Please let me allow to introduce myself. I am the living king. I can do anything.
It's a wonderful freedom of expression you have there.
It's beautiful to consider oneself omnipotent, but do you regard yourself, caller, as a blob being, or is there a possibility that you have, in addition to being omnipotent, have also chosen the path of perfection? It looks like we may have lost the caller.
Yeah, I would say one disadvantage of being the Lizard King is that one is cold-blooded. And in Boston, especially in the winter, it becomes very difficult to maintain homeostasis with the sun really only being out several hours a day.
The heating bill would become rather fuel costs.
Well, there really is a lizard person inside of each one of us, and we can feel it, especially in the long, cold Boston winters, and our souls ache for the, and our skin aches for the sunlight to feel the warm embrace of Mother Nature.
I personally, I have to say, I enjoy the effects of seasonal affective disorder. Most people don't like having their mood, you know, be plunged in the darkness, but I think that it can be an important experience to have. I sort of enjoy the lessening of frivolity and the deepening of all the emotional experiences that comes with very mild depression.
I find that it can be a real block to my meditation. My experience has become overshadowed with grief.
On the other hand, it can also unleash very powerful but somewhat dark carnal desires and forces. And I think sometimes in the dark, gloomy winter, it's important to give in to those forces and really, you know, experience that regeneration.
I personally find it more easy to fall into the states of meditation, to slip into the sort of calm, melancholy state, which allows me to access the other metaphysical planes. that somehow the depression and the lack of movement causes me to access those non-physical areas so much easier.
I find that the dark winter of the New England area sort of heralds a winter of my
youth.
Spirit. My spirit.
In your youth.
And well, the youth is gone, you know, but the spirit. Spirit.
It's funny, Aurora mentioned, I wonder why my voice is echoing so much.
I think it has something to do with our spiritual ambience.
I see. Well, Aurora mentioned this idea of slipping into the higher planes through meditation, through the force of the winter melancholy, and I find sometimes it's interesting to meditate in the opposite direction. In other words, to remove oneself from the three-dimensional physical experience and move back into a more basic two-dimensional or one-dimensional experience of being.
Let's try once again to connect to a caller. Marhaban, caller.
Hello?
Yes, welcome.
Hello?
Yes, welcome.
I can't hear anyone over there. Is anyone there?
Caller, can you hear us? Perhaps the caller is on the wrong physical plane.
I still can't hear you. I can hear that I'm not being heard, but I can't hear anything on my side.
Caller, we can hear you. We'll gesture wildly to our engineer.
Let me try this. Caller, if you can hear us now, blink twice. That didn't seem to work.
Perfect mood music for the sort of wintry feeling we've been describing lately.
Well, we're remaining unsure of the difficulty with the line, so let's try that caller again. Marhaban, caller.
They're not.
Caller.
Hello.
Yes, marhaban.
Hey, now I just lost my train of thought.
But you are able to hear us.
I'm able to hear you now, yeah.
That's excellent.
Allow your train of thought to find you rather than seeking for it. Allow your mind to drift.
Oh, okay. Well, so you guys were talking about higher planes and ascending to higher planes, and I had a thought about that. What I've been doing for a while is I discovered this when I was out camping. Actually, I'm going to have to let you go. I'm gonna have to tell you the story later. I'm sorry about that. I'm leading you on, but I gotta go, so bye.
Okay, my salami corner.
I feel very unsatisfied right now.
I think life is often like this, you know, that just when you think you are on the brink to true understanding, or to the, you know, to be sensing in front of you the vein of some mine which you have been exploring for decades.
You die.
That for a variety of reasons, the vein may be empty, your rock hammer may disintegrate, your teeth may all fall out.
Your sword may enter its sheath.
It all is possible. And then the resulting exploration leads you to another spiritual winter. An expectation of growth that is denied.
My mood is feeling tinges of purple at the moment. Perhaps a song changes in order.
Well, this reminds me of a very beautiful line from a song by a sort of mystical British group called the Kinks. Oh, I believe we have a caller on the line again, but let me finish the line. It says, as the sun, I think it says the sun something and the clouds sadly pass me by. I forget the beginning of it, though.
Yeah.
But it's from a song called This Time Tomorrow, a very beautiful song that I use for my meditation.
Well, let's try that caller again. Caller, welcome back.
Hey.
Marhaban.
Hey, I was telling the story. Basically, I was out camping, and I was using a loo, right? Like a ditch in the ground to do my business. And I passed out there one day after I had a little bit too much to drink. And when I woke up, there were all these twinkling lights all around me. And so ever since then, I've been doing that once a week in my bathroom. I just set up the sink and put a plug in the bottom and just done my business in there. Just sat in there for a couple hours, just sniffing, smelling in really deeply. And I have some tapes and candles, too, that go along with it. But the candles can't be scented, and boy, does that get me there.
Now, caller, have you made any specific changes to your diet to have these unusual effects from your voiding?
Yes, I eat a lot more ether, and so
you actually consume ether.
Well, I drink a little bit, yeah, like in capsule form, and so then when it comes out the other end, it opens up a little bit, and I think that might have something to do with it, but I don't know.
I see, and this was engineered specifically to have this effect, or was it,
No, actually, I was just smuggling some stuff over from Connecticut. And they have the border regulations.
Of course, the borders.
Yes, I know that some people will eat very slightly old seafood, like perhaps a day past its prime, in order to achieve very lucid and meaningful dreams.
I know that many people would regard eating rotten shrimp as deleterious.
Well, not rotten, just maybe... maybe a day or two before they become rotten, but a day or two after they are fully fresh.
Well, caller, I'd like to point out that in order to achieve true enlightenment, it is quite important to remember that your chemicals should not enter your body. The ether in the pill form, while it may do something for you, metaphysically or mentally, if you want the true herbal experience, you should ingest things such as capsaicin or honey bush root.
Nutmeg and stuff.
Yes, nutmeg to a certain extent, but nutmeg is more of an ingestive opiate.
Yeah, so you gotta smoke it.
Now,
I gotta go. Actually, I'm sorry, guys. My father just fell off the porch, so I'll see you later. Bye.
Thank you, caller. It's interesting, however, that people find some spiritual benefit from harming themselves, that somehow that enables them to release. Now, I think part of it has to do with harming the part of yourself that confines you.
Perhaps oxygen deprivation can close off parts of the frontal lobe which keep the mind from opening.
And I know that various intelligence agencies in the past have used methods of personality breakdown when interrogating people intensely, where they'll actually try to destroy their personality through months of brainwashing and deprivation. And I imagine that some people, I've heard actually that some people will purposefully pretend to be international criminals because they want to undergo this form of personality modification. Because they're unhappy with their current self. And I believe there's a company in Montana that actually has started hiring itself out as a sort of service where it'll take you for several months and put you in extreme deprivation and use brainwashing techniques to really destroy your personality. And it costs thousands of dollars, of course, to have this done to you.
So now, to me, this brings back the idea of the balance between freedom and control producing perfection, that the more freedom one has, the more difficult perfection is to achieve. The perfect application of a great deal of power is a challenge, but it is valuable when it is achieved. Taking oneself and having oneself be programmed, it reduces the probability of perfection is higher, but the value, when it is achieved, is lower. And people don't, I think, realize that perfection is not all perfections are equal.
I guess this is why the East Germans were so unhappy when the Berlin Wall Berlin wall fell.
Because
they suddenly were inundated with choices. They could now buy pumpernickel or rye or black bread instead of not being able to buy any bread, which is very sort of freeing in its lack of choice.
In its own way.
I find that having a variety of pickles available really can be just a wonderful gluttonous experience.
Different sizes, too. Occasionally you might be in the mood for a very large cucumber or pickle.
So maybe that example is the application of a great deal of choice and going in every direction. So it's the obvious answer when you have infinite power. So perhaps I was wrong in saying that infinite power makes perfection difficult, because you simply can choose to be perfect. You have infinite power.
Well, the problem with infinite power is that one would never actually choose to exercise the infinite power, because it would simply be pointless.
I admit to breaking oftentimes from my vegan diet to eat processed bologna. It's just one thing that I crave constantly. I believe that it's probably some chemical that was put in there to harm me and to bend my mind into enjoying it.
That's interesting. A few years ago, I started my own regimen. I call myself a spamitarian. This means that I abstain from all meats except for spam, which is a form of processed pork. And I find spam essentially, through its processing, has essentially gone back and become a vegetable again.
Yeah, I was about to ask not to, interpret your religion for you, certainly, Professor Levine, but I felt that perhaps this would conflict somewhat with your religion there.
Right. Well, I mean, the Jewish legal and religious thinkers have really written a lot about spam, and they basically came to the conclusion that the essence of the prohibition for eating pork was based on the molecular structure of the pork flesh.
So it does not actually violate the
right.
spirit.
Once that molecular structure is destroyed, as it is in the production of spam, it is then considered permissible, in fact, even virtuous, to consume spam.
So out of curiosity, does that extend to non-kosher marshmallows?
It extends to, yes, some form of non-kosher marshmallows, and also adultery with extraterrestrials.
Because the actual, now to my mind, adultery, just as pork flesh is defined by the, the molecular content, then adultery would be defined by the social label and the internal label that you place on the encounter.
No, actually, it's based mostly on whether the life form is carbon-based or not.
So if it were a copper-based life form,
then it's okay. All bets are off then.
What about plants?
Well, do not forbid for yourself what nature has permitted for you.
Exactly. There is a story in the Talmud which says that if one sees a beautiful apple, then one is obligated to eat it, for one must not deny themselves the good of God. And I have heard of some rabbis who will purposefully have a lobster dinner every Friday night for their Shabbat dinner. And even though lobster is technically forbidden, they reason the following way: that Shabbat dinner should be the nicest and the most expensive dinner one can imagine. And in our current culture, lobster meets those criteria, and therefore one must eat lobster.
Well, I also think that there is an ancient philosophy which says that in order to be more perfectly perfect, to actually value the perfection that one has achieved, one must sully the perfection and achieve perfection with the sullied character. So that is that one would take their rugs and throw sand on them, or tear up the perfect
use them as sandpaper
fabric.
It's interesting you say this, because as you may know from previous shows, I used to have a rather horrible stutter, and that is what brought me into the musical therapy world. And I've achieved a level of perfection within that world due mainly to that imperfection in the beginning, that stuttering.
That it was imperfection that showed you in which direction to be perfect, to seek perfection.
Now, there is an alternative philosophy which says that one should not use imperfection to seek perfection, but rather one must pursue imperfection as the true but perverse ultimate goal. And this philosophy was exemplified by the Sabbatean movement, of course, of the 17th century Jewish world.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, where the Jewish putative Messiah, Shabtai Tzvi, advocated transgressions as a form of redeeming the holy sparks from the impure.
Hmm. There was a similar movement in Iran in the 13th century, which propagated such beliefs as eating in the afternoon during the holy month of Ramadan, and the idea of praying in a direction away from Mecca and so on. And the idea there was that which is permissible, they had believed then that the apocalypse had passed, which is an unusual, a rare belief, that in every century since apocalypse was prophesied, there have been those who have claimed that the apocalypse was near, you know, but very few groups actually believed that they were in the next world. These people did, and they argued that which was permissible had become impermissible, and that which was impermissible had become permissible.
I see. Opposite life.
And the result was, of course, that they were all killed sooner or later for offending the wrong people.
But they probably enjoyed being killed.
Well, I think it may have sort of contradicted their basic belief that this was the afterlife.
Hmm. Well, of course, another aspect of being religious is that one can use the taboos that one was raised with to more fully enjoy sin.
So that it's a sister to another belief, so that it's this belief that temptation is there so that we may be perfect in spite of it, so that the freedom to be tempted may help.
Right, and this view is that the reason that prohibitions exist
is to make breaking the prohibition
more enjoyable.
More enjoyable.
Yeah. And in fact, really taking this idea to its ultimate extension, one could believe that, yes, these religions are true, and there was some deity who commanded thus and thus and thus and prohibited thus and thus and thus, but the deity knew that man's ultimate nature would be to transgress his word, and he was thus creating this system to make it more enjoyable for us.
That's an interesting form of hedonism.
Well, the view then would be that in raising one's children, one should place layer upon layer of restriction upon the child in order to permit that child to gradually break prohibition after prohibition. Once again, if you'd like to call, the number is 617-253-8810. Caller, marhaban.
That prohibition comment about it, they're making people getting off on things being illegal or whatever.
On breaking the rules.
Right. So, as far as alcohol.
Mm-hmm. Alcohol, but not
you
only.
You can't really. You can't really have that. You can't really brew your own alcohol for the amount that a lot of people drink it. I think that would take a lot of space. Like, I would say that my father drinks more beer than he can brew.
Well, perhaps your father should, under that philosophy, explore other forms of...
That's great. And I would like to say that as a marijuana smoker, I could stand in my yard and not have to work ever. I could just grow plants through the spring, and I could live in a shack. But for some reason, this country doesn't want that. They want you to eat burgers and work shitty jobs, and fuck that.
Yeah, so, for one thing, you should not say that on the air.
Well, unfortunately, we've had to take our caller off the air because there are rules about what we are allowed to put out. But in the meantime, the
maybe we should just listen to the music and relax a little.
I'd like to address something that the caller mentioned. That it's important to have a sense of spiritual hedonism. In the way that you feel somewhat, you feel elevated in your actions and in your daily routine, and not just feel pleasure of the moment.
Let's really meditate. I like Professor Levine's suggestion. Let's take a moment and really just enjoy what we're hearing. Was very, very relaxing. I think we've all recentered. It's hard to imagine living and sustaining oneself, but I think it would be really lovely if that were an option. If really one could survive without depending on the entire system. I mean, is it possible for one to sew one's own clothing?
Or to water one's own clothing?
Or to eat and drink one's own clothing.
I think Thoreau tried this at Walden Pond, but then Walden Pond, he had to stop because Walden Pond became a bit of a tourist destination.
I believe it is difficult spiritually and emotionally for one to become so isolated in a society where others have different perceptions, and it's wonderful that we have this program to center everyone around the same circle and to express our views.
Yeah, we just always have to remember to do so in a gentle way. So I think that maybe Robert again. Let's try again. Robert, marhaban.
Hello.
Hello, marhaban, welcome.
I just want to apologize for my comments before. My neighbors next door, my grandparents next door, are killing me.
Oh, well, Robert, I really want to say that I appreciate the feeling behind them, and we just have to be careful about how we express them. But I really share your dream of someday being able to sustain myself, and now in the winter of my own life, I wonder if it's possible. But by setting aside enough, I believe that it may be possible.
Yeah, Ted Kaczynski sort of lived the dream, one might say, for several years.
He was just too concerned, I think, with the goings on outside of his small universe. I think if he had been able to really isolate himself, to really meditate and to enjoy simply existing.
So one might say that his demise was a failure of his hermetism and not a result of his hermetism. Mm.
Well, let's not ourselves be hermits. So if you'd like to call in and join our discussion with the four of us now, it's 617-253-8810. Caller, marhaban.
Hello, Robert.
Yeah, welcome.
How are you?
We are well, thank you, caller.
Oh, the music is beautiful, and when you did meditate, it did bring me back to my center, where I was at when I was listening to the show. You're so patient.
Well, thank you, caller.
And non-judgmental.
Well, indeed, who are we to judge?
That's true. It's a difficult thing, but I try to pull myself back when I feel that I'm doing it. But you're really good at it. And it's a great show. It's a funny show. I'm just laying here. I just gave myself a complete Reiki treatment. And I'm feeling the darkness of the winter. And
it's such a cold time, isn't it?
Yeah, but
it?
It's beautiful, too. If you look at your windows and the ice and the rain just falling on your windows with the sunshine coming through.
I think, caller, you know, I have many friends. Of course, where I'm from, winter is a great deal more mild in some ways than it is here. And when I came first to lands where it really snowed, and people would tell me that they enjoyed the winter, I really believe that what we enjoy is dominance over the winter. We're indoors and we're warm.
Yeah, but it doesn't all have to be dominant, you know. It can be part of the time. But, there, you know, you can't just be dormant the whole winter, you know, like a groundhog.
Yeah, I'm
just, you know, kind of fooling around. But it's just not like dormant, you know. But I can see the moods that it brings you into. And I love the way the gentleman described it as it's okay to be there with that mild depression because it brings you back. It brings you into a different realm.
Yes, and I find, I'm not advocating this, but sometimes one might feel an urge to just, when it's snowing, to just go outside and lay there in the snow for hours and hours, letting the snow accumulate over one's body and just sort of submitting to the power of winter.
Well, it's interesting. Snow is a natural insulator, and actually those who are in much colder areas, when they need to find a warm place to sleep, they just lay in a snowbank. And I find that such a beautiful metaphor for how winter makes one feel, that you are lying in a snowbank and that you are cozy.
That's true. Yeah, that's so true.
The idea of really being in winter's embrace.
I was in Wellfleet down in the woods for 3 years, and I'm a writer. Mm-hmm. And I was so inspired by the beauty of just the woods. And it was all pine trees, and I did see little fairies and twinkling lights. It was inspired me to do my a lot of writing down there. And I saw Nixes and fairies and foes alike, and it was just magical. And I try to stay aligned with the universal life force energy, and that's my goal at this moment. And it's difficult, but if I keep affirming that that's where I want to be, that's where I am.
Well, caller, that's a beautiful sentiment, and I think all of us have experienced that sort of feeling at one time or another. Personally, I partake in mental photography, where I look at a scene and sort of try to burn it into my memory. And this year, one of the most beautiful images I've had was staring up at a glass what is that glass panel on the ceiling, and watching the raindrops, large raindrops fall upon it, and the beautiful colors of the leaves, the reds and browns and greens, sort of being melting together in the raindrops. It was just...
Can you bring that into focus, like in your center, your second chakra?
Yes, the most wonderful thing about mental photography is that you can envelop yourself not only in the image, but in your feelings at the time and the sort of sensations that made that image so special and so warm.
And I think photoshopping is a lot easier too with mental photography.
I really add
loved ones to your pictures.
What is your name?
Don't mean to interrupt or anything, but fuck off.
Oh, he was still on the line?
Yeah, no, Robert was still there, but...
Oh, my God. That was weird.
Well, so...
Oh, God.
And to me, I think
I think you need someone at the radio station to help you edit your callers.
Well, Robert is really somewhat of a wonderful caller. He always has these really beautiful thoughts.
Yeah, of course, the show is live, so it's very difficult to edit, you know, live human voices.
And we don't wish the experience to be dampened.
I understand. You're right.
Well, just going back to the topic of a conversation, I sort of, your experience of being in the woods reminded me of about a decade of my life, which I spent living in Buffalo, New York. And one might think, okay, that's a strange place to live for a spiritual sojourner such as you, Professor Levine.
I'm in Boston now, and I'm finding the beauty and the nature in the city, but go ahead.
Yeah, and, buffalo wings are very tasty, but that wasn't the primary lure.
Is that your friend that's calling you?
Well, the primary lure for me was...
Can you tell me something? Is spam so processed that it really is a vegetable?
Oh, I mean, according to Jewish law, at least.
Is that true?
Well, truth is a relative concept,
I think.
I
can't tell if you're joking or if you're serious.
I mean, I have to admit, I think that the opinions are at the least varied.
Yes, it's a matter of dispute, as I think most things in life are. And but going back to the Buffalo experience, the main attraction for me was to be near that sort of wonder of nature known as Niagara Falls. And there's this elevator you can take if you visit the falls, which takes you down an old shaft into the heart of the falls, where you can really walk into the powerful roar of the water.
Wow.
And you can get pretty close. And
it must be deafening, isn't it?
It's deafening, and...
Do you have to wear earplugs?
You don't have to wear earplugs, but it's a very powerful experience. You feel the water rushing against your body, almost an unnatural feeling of power from the strength of the water and the wind.
Wow, that's unbelievable.
And I used to go there for about 3 hours a day and scream facing the water. I would just scream until my voice was gone, and then I would go home and sleep to recuperate from the sort of intense spiritual high.
How much do you have to buy a ticket like to get down there?
Well, one does have to, but I...
Is it expensive, Joe?
It is, but I sort of became friends with one of the employees there,
cool.
So I was able to go for free with...
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
I mean,
yeah, you should have just maybe worked there.
I mean, this issue about
vibrations... If you liked it so much, you know.
Well, to provide some, shall we say, favors to one of the managers...
Well, one of the
Dunkin' Donuts.
One of the issues is this idea of vibrations is that, you know, as I walk around outside, I see many people wearing headphones and experiencing one kind of vibration. But when
their brains are ready to blow up,
it precisely, you know, you sit there and I remember vibrating, and it's to me always about those deep vibrations in my stomach. Let's bring another caller into the circle here. Caller.
Okay, I'll call.
No, stay with us. Caller? Caller?
Hello?
I'm not sure if we're able to...
I'd like to go back to the screaming of Professor Levine. That's actually quite a thick vocal technique that is used in situations of extreme distress, it can be an incredibly emotional experience, and I tend to use it to allow a patient or a student who is unable to express themselves, I use it to allow them to access their inner self and to understand their deep emotions.
And you could imagine what kind of experience it was for me doing this every single day for about 3 hours a day for an entire decade.
At that point, I would worry about vocal blisters.
Well, I think my throat probably did get a little calloused, but some people said that it improved my singing voice.
So...
Well, Cor, I'm so sorry to say that we're just reaching the end of our hour.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much, Cor.
Bye.
Namaste. Namaste.
And thanks and sorry, apologies to the many callers who we were unable to get to tonight. Thanks also, of course, to my glorious co-hosts here, Professor Levine.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be here.
The pleasure was ours and very manifest, and to Aurora.
Well, and thank you for being on, Dr. Jalas.
I am a Dr. Jalas Sakran here on Music for Human on every Friday at 7 p.m. on WMBR 88.1 FM in Cambridge. Stay tuned for Massachusetts Bay and the response. Ma'asalama.
Safety.
Number one,
cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two,
look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three,
cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four,
cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians in unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.
Hey, this is Brad. You're listening to Massachusetts Bay in Response. Starting off early tonight with my segment. Gina's on her way in, so we'll put on mine and hopefully you guys like it.